Ball Spark. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western and Northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. Glad to have you along in Northwestern Oklahoma, right here in West Central Oklahoma for the next hour. Special day today. We have Royals, the Royal Couple coming in. The Royal Couple of Junior Golf.
Man, I expect a crown and a scepter when they walk in.
There will probably be trophies.
I hope so. I was requesting that as soon as this was announced. I want to see this thing.
We've got Maddie Camus, Trace Hill. Maddie's Kingfisher heading to OCU in the fall. Trace from right here in Elk City also heading to OCU in the fall. They both played up at Southern Hills yesterday in the Oklahoma Junior Masters. Might be some bragging rights for one of the two. You'll have to hang out until they get here to know which one. But I mean, we're talking about, for Maddie, she's the two-time defending OGA Junior Stroke Play Champion. She was the 2000 WOGA, which is Women's Oklahoma Golf Association Stroke Play Champion. She was the 2021 4A Individual State Champ, winning that title in Cushing by 20. And then Trace has had an unbelievable run since the state tournament. He won the 4A Individual Championship as well. Just got off the last 2 weeks. He won the OGA State AM last week, and then maybe or maybe not, he won that Oklahoma Junior Masters yesterday. So maybe some bragging rights for him over her today. We'll ask him which one's better. And I heard a funny story about this that I want to ask him and see how much truth there is. It's kind of like an urban legend about maybe what kick-started his just absolute role this spring and into the summertime.
Okay.
Simone Biles, we know way more about what happened today than we did yesterday. We can get into that a little bit. And then also, the last thing, what we left off with yesterday and really didn't get to, we've seen the trade proposal for the Thunder coming up in tomorrow night's draft.
Alleged.
The alleged trade proposal. How much do we think that that's really possible? And then what's going to happen? Will Oklahoma City stand pat and make all three picks? Will they make trades? Just kind of a preview of a draft preview for tomorrow, let's say. We might actually make it through an entire show without having to talk about conference realignment, which seems impossible here with everything going on.
Wasn't much changing news since we got off air to now yesterday.
Yeah.
I think everything's kind of stood pat. We never really gave our two cents on the what's turned into kind of a fiasco here in state between OSU president. Then there's a rebuttal, basically, from Bob Stoops of what the president of OSU said. We didn't really get into it on air about that. I think Jim kind of covered it all yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, we could. It turns out we're not going to miss conference realignment because that's a pretty good topic. I mean, what all has been we kind of hit on from the OSU side, but not really. Obviously, that rebuttal hadn't happened from Stoops by the time we got done with the show, and it was pretty interesting. I thought to pick out a couple of things from what he said, and not necessarily just now, also maybe a little bit in the past too, with if you can write kind of read between the lines, I guess, of what his statement was. Hi, Jared.
How are you?
All right, so you mentioned the rebuttal letter from Bob Stoops.
Yeah.
With regards to what Dr. Casey Shrum had said, the new brand new newly minted president of Oklahoma State. Like you said, Jim talked about it basically all day yesterday. I kind of tend to agree with some of the things that he was saying. Think back to last Thursday or Friday, whenever the first statement was released. I got no problem with any of that, you know. But as we move along here, I do think it's time for that to kind of pivot from the Oklahoma State side and start pointing out your great qualities as opposed to trying to tear down somebody else's. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's time to start, you know, making that move, whatever that move might be. If it's trying to be be as attractive as possible to somebody to try to save the Big 12, which to me seems like, you know, plan C or D at this point for any of those eight schools left over in the Big 12 outside of maybe Baylor if nobody wants them. But if I'm an OSU, I kind of get away from the it is what it is. You get away from the little brother syndrome and you start going out on your own and prove and telling everybody and proving your worth to everybody, which will allow this thing to end up being a net positive by the time it's all said and done.
Yeah, stand on your own platform. Stand, you know, you don't want to be in the shadow, then get out of the shadow. Quit bringing yourself into the shadow by making these comments. So, Jim, if you heard it yesterday during his show, he nailed it perfectly, and I agree. You make a statement the first time because that seemed to be the trend that everybody's doing, just making that statement and then moving on. But to make the second statement and it just – what was it that you said? It just proves that shows that – man, we just live rent-free in their head as far as OU fans are concerned or OU is concerned. Man, it's the constant it's constantly in their brain about, whoa, oh, you did, what are they, OU. Well, let it go, you know. I'm just cowboy up, move on, let it go. And Jim, he was nailing it perfectly, and apparently he was getting a lot of response from former OSU athletes who agreed with them. So it's okay to make the first statement. The second one was a little bit much. And if you haven't seen the Oklahoman, the opinion piece, which this isn't that crazy? Bob Stoops wrote an opinion piece.
He had to. Listen, it's not – some of it probably is his words, but come on. This is exactly what Castiglione and Harris, the president, the new president, that's what they want to say but can't. And yeah. So it
you
just
think they reached out to him.
Heck
and said,
yes,
hey, can
they
you do
did.
Something here for us?
100%, and he would be happy to do
Isn't
it.
Technically, he's still an employee.
He
of the
is
university.
An employee of the university, yeah. And that's why he's the perfect. I mean, I heard Jim use this term yesterday, and maybe like he said a little bit too far, but like the hatchet man. He's the guy that because everybody knows his personality, everybody knows how fired up he can get about such things, and he's the perfect guy to do it. And listen, I'm not sitting here telling you he wrote what they told him to, that as if he doesn't believe what he's saying. I'm not saying that, but this didn't. There's no way this was just Bob Stoops reacting on his own fruition to what was said in those statements. It's still
whatever he said or didn't say. What I was saying was it's weird. In my opinion, we're living in a day where we've seen Bob Stoops write an opinion piece for the Oklahoma. I never thought I'd see the day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well,
I go back to Bob Stoops at press conferences, you know, being snippy with reporters at times, not writing a piece for the Oklahoman. Right there next to Barry Trammell's piece. You know what I mean? That's what I was getting at.
We saw two pretty wild things we didn't think we'd see. That and a piece of stationery with both Oklahoma and Texas's official seal on it to turn into the SEC all in one day.
What are we? This in the Red River rivalry in October in Dallas. It might not be as
listen. There's no chance it's going to be. Instead of singing, you know, the eyes of Texas or Boomer Sooner or Oklahoma State song. It's not like everybody's just going to get together, hold hands, and start going, kumbaya, my Lord.
You know
it ain't happening.
You know what's going to happen in pregame? The entire Cotton Bowl is going to be chanting SEC.
No, that's not happening either. It's not happening either. Now, I thought it was interesting, aside from, I mean, Bob reacting, which was just, it was kind of shocking until you start thinking. Like, when you think about his official capacity with the university, he makes sense to be able to do it because he kind of can, and nobody else involved in the situation can. But then you start hearing the reports Chip Brown had it, you know, about the buyouts. Because the one thing that stood out to a lot of people yesterday in the letter that OU and Texas sent to the application letter for membership into the SEC, it had a date on it, and that date was July 1st, 2025.
Right.
And the reason for that was that is literally the day after the grant of rights runs out with the Big 12 on that June 30th. So, you know, what does that date mean anything? I don't think anybody really thinks it means much. But there was a report from Chip Brown yesterday, too. I think he's with 247 instead of Orange Bloods anymore.
Now, right.
And he was talking about how the Longhorn Network, instead of basically getting folded into the SEC network, it would just ESPN's going to pay to make that go away.
Right.
And because of the length of the contract left with Texas, which is about 10 years at $15 million, just so happens that people doing the math, if Oklahoma and Texas wanted to be in the big or out of the Big 12 in the SEC next season for 2022, that dollar figure is right around $150 million.
Right.
And then the speculation was, okay, Texas is going to, you know, that's going to be the agreement. ESPN write them a check. Texas kind of turn it back over. You know, it makes it sound like Texas is going to foot the bill for Oklahoma. I don't think that's exactly how that's going to work. I think it may be more of a, okay, here's the money up front. Now, either since ESPN's going to own the rights to everything, SEC-wise, you know, start taking portions of that out of the money that OU would earn in that conference. You know, I don't think at the end of the day Texas is going to pay $75 million for Oklahoma to move. They might do it up front, but at some point, you know, that's going to be paid back.
I personally think they don't have to pay a dime. I think Big 12 is going to – I think this is all a moot point, honestly.
Yeah.
I do. And I think it's just a show of goodwill, I think, for Texas to let that report get out there. And so this show their urgency of leaving, and yeah, OU's urgency of leaving too. It's like, we're willing to pay this right now if the Big 12 decides they want to go with eight teams or invite a couple of AAC teams or whatever to keep the Big 12 alive. And if that's the case, then I mean, who knows? But you're right. I mean, OU, I obviously would pay it back, be like a loan, but I don't think they'll pay a dime on it. Not one dime. I think we're, like I said, yesterday, day before. I think before kickoff Labor Day weekend, we're going to know. Honestly, I think the Big 12 will know its fate by then.
Are you surprised how in lockstep these two seem to be in this
Very
process?
Very surprised. But I think, you know,
like, I think you could see it if it was OU and OSU.
I was talking to my wife about this last night, how this is almost the most shocking thing was how OU and Texas are such hand-in-hand in this process. And allegedly, it appears that they've been hand-in-hand for months moving forward, and both parties able to keep it under wraps and all that. I mean, that's almost the most surprising thing outside of the fact that they're moving on to the SEC.
Uh-oh, Jared.
What do we got?
We've got hardware moving into the studio.
Man, should we take
a break? I do mean hardware, yep.
All right, we're going to have to make room for this hardware in this little studio.
We're going to have to make room, we're going to have to take a break, and we're going to get Junior Golf royalty. The royal couple, as it were.
Awesome.
He can't hear me, which is unfortunate. We're joined by, the royal couple of Junior Golf in Oklahoma. It's Kingfisher's Matty Kamus, Trace Hill of Elk City, both headed to OCU in the fall. Both coming off nice performances yesterday in the Oklahoma Junior Masters. One of you got third, one of you got first. Pretty bad time for you to get third, Maddie. Just as far as timing goes, this was kind of a tough break for you yesterday.
It was.
Did you have to hear any of that coming home, or was there any trash talks?
He's not a bragger. I mean, I'm more of the bragger, but I didn't play my best. But it's a tough course. My goal was just to beat the course. And just play better than I played last year. It did play easier, but I did play a lot better than last year, so that was my goal. But my best friend, Reagan, she played really, really good. We got to play together. And her biggest strength is off the tee, and she almost drove all of the greens, so she had easy chips. And she was on every par 5 and 2, which made a big difference. And I, on the par 5s, did not hit very good drives, so that was kind of where I struggled with birdies. But I did have a couple, but it wasn't enough.
76 at Southern Hills. I think a whole bunch of people listening would have taken that and ran without even playing. How and when did you get into the game of golf growing up?
I was 10. I played softball. I started out t-ball, and then I played softball pretty competitively. I was on like a little travel team, and then I just got super burnt out. I hate running.
And me then, too.
I had knee surgery when I had just quit softball and then started I started tournaments when I was 10 and then had knee surgery when I was 11. And then after that, I was like, I can't run anymore. So then I really started to pick up golf. And in my household, you have to play a sport. And so I sat at the dinner table and ruled out every sport that involved running. So it was either swimming or golf. And I was like, well, I mean, I don't really like swimming either, so I guess I'll play golf. So,
was there a certain point as you got going into the game where you thought, hey, I'm pretty good at this?
I was probably around 12. I started out playing the U.S. Kids Tour, and there were only like four girls, and I got third in like every tournament. And then I started getting second and then first, and I was like, well, this isn't bad. And so I started out when I was 12, and then I skipped straight to the OJGT Tour when I was, I think, 13, because I think 12 is the youngest you can play. And back then, there were a bunch of really, really big girls in that were really, really good. And so when I started getting like top 10, that was a really big deal. And I remember getting, I think it was like fifth at this tournament. And that was huge because all of these girls in front of me were big time players. And so then I started to really take it serious then. And then I think the summer that I turned 14 was when it all turned around, and I played. She's on tour now. Her name is Yu Jong Song. She's from South Korea, and her parents are, I think she's in South Korea right now. Her parents are professors at OU, and so she practiced out at Jimmy Austin, and she went to Norman, and then she went to Q School her junior year. And the last tournament she played was the Kicking Bird Match Play tournament, and I played her in the semifinals, and we went all the way to 17 holes. And I don't think anybody had ever taken her to 17 holes before. And her parents came up to me after the round and told me that if I kept practicing, that I would be the next Yu Jong. And that was a really, really big deal. She was a junior, and I was 14, headed in my freshman year. And then after that, I gained a lot of confidence and started to play really, really good.
So you just graduated high school 4 years later. Take us to the state tournament. So you're playing at Cushing, and like, this, to me, this doesn't seem like the way it goes. So, you knew, 9 holes in, for sure after the first round. I mean, you're not going to say you knew, but you knew, I'm going to be the individual state champion. I beat everybody by 20 by the time it's over. But the team was close. Mm-hmm. How much different was that for you? I mean, I know it wasn't the same way for him. You know, and it doesn't really even make sense to me that you have that individual one wrapped up, so you're worried about playing your best for the team, knowing, hey, I'm going to win no matter what how I play. How much different is that in your mind than what most everybody else goes through trying to win that team title?
It was extremely difficult because I had no idea the team standings, because I was just kind of focused on my game. And so I made like a 3-foot birdie putt on the last hole, and I had no idea that that tied us. Mm-hmm. And we've never, I mean, we don't really have a strong golf team. Most of the girls just I convinced to pick up sophomore year. Mm-hmm. And they were softball players. And so it was just kind of more of a fun deal. And so when I found out that we were tied, I was like, holy cow, like we just tied for the state title, which was a huge deal for us because we don't really have like a strong golf team. And we won a couple tournaments that season, and I think we kind of had an idea that we could do it, but we knew Hilldale had some pretty solid players, and I think first through fifth bag, Hilldale can shoot like mid-80s, and that was a big deal. So my 20-stroke victory was definitely like the – that definitely put us into the position that we were in. And so we went into the playoff, and we were all super, super nervous. I mean, I was pretty nervous just because I wanted it so bad for our team because they haven't won a – I don't think Kingfisher's won a girls' state championship in, like, 10 or more years. And they hadn't even been to state. My freshman year was the first time they'd been to state in, I think, 9 years. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge deal for Kingfisher just because nobody really focused on the girls' golf team because it was always a big – it's a big basketball school. And so when – ever we made it to state, everybody was like, oh wow, like they're actually pretty good, because they don't even have a boys team this year. And so we were all super nervous but super excited, and we actually It's a really long story. We actually did win, but there was some cheating that went on the first hole, and the rules official was not on the course. He was up in the clubhouse. And so when he came down there, I mean, he had no idea. And so you have all of the Kingfisher girls telling him what happened, and then you have all the Hilldale girls telling him what happened. And so the second group was my fourth and fifth bag, and then Hilldale's third, fourth, and fifth. So it was three Hilldale girls and two. And his justification was three against two was how we were going to decide to go to the next hole. And I lost it, and I got so mad, and I was like, well, can't I say anything, because that would be three on three? And he was like, no, you weren't in the final group, you can't say anything. So then we went to hole two, which is a par three, and we lost that, but really we should have won
on number one, the par five. What for you, you're talking about how nervous you were. I assume you've been in an individual playoff at some point in your golf career. How much different was it, the pressure that on you, thinking, oh my gosh, instead of just me, there's four other girls here, and really, like you said, a whole town, because it's been so long since it's happened.
It was, I mean, I'd never been in any kind of team playoff before, because we don't ever play anything team-wise, and I guess college will be, that'll be a whole different story, because that's a big team deal, but I wanted them to do, I mean, I just wanted, I knew they were all super nervous, because they wanted it so bad for me too, and themselves, but I was trying my best to help them, because we can help as teammates, and I was just trying to keep them calm the whole way we were walking. I was like, don't worry, just play how you normally played. I mean, it's not going to matter. And I think they did a really, really good job. We are all super, super close friends, and we have a freshman who was, she was so nervous because we were all seniors, and then she was looking up to me, and she was so nervous, but she actually did pretty good, and I was so excited for her, but I wanted it for her too, so that she could be, you know, a state championship or a state champion her freshman year with the team full of seniors, and because that was the only five we had, we didn't have.
There's nobody left. It was just you guys.
So she'll be by herself next year with, I think there's two girls that said they were gonna play. So hopefully she can experience that again. But I just kind of wanted it for our coach and for us as a team, not really myself, because high school golf to me, was never really a big deal for me, because I've always been more into the competitive stuff. And I know Elk City's like a golf school, and Kingfisher, their boys team used to be, but the girls, so high school golf to me is so different, because you know, we play from the reds and it's a whole different game, and there's not a whole lot of really competitive girls, so it's just kind of a, but it was exciting.
So what's left on your schedule this summer before you head to OCU?
I have got, well, the KCO.
Yes.
And then I've got the Texas Junior Golf Tour Elites Cup, which is at TPC Las Colinas next week. The practice round is Monday, and the tournament is Tuesday, Wednesday. And I've played in that the last 2 years. I got second last year by one stroke. It was at TPC Las Colinas last year, so hope to redeem my mistakes that I made there.
And then is there, I was looking on the OGA's website, is the, is that a an inaugural event, the women's, or is that the WOGA stroke
it's
play?
It's the women's OGA. The WOGA has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
So it's like two different deals, because the WOGA does do a stadium and they do a stroke play, but this is the OGA. So they've never done it before, and I hope they still have it, because I know last time I checked there wasn't very many girls signed up, but I think they've got a couple more, so hopefully they
go ahead and do it anyway. Yeah.
That's, and so mid, that would be my last event, the 10th and 11th. Yeah. So that would be my last event before college.
All right, last one before we talk trash at the end. Why did you choose OCU?
I really fell in love with the coach. We met him like 3 years ago, and he's so different from everybody else. I mean, we've talked to a bunch of other coaches, and they really only care about, you know, your golf. They don't really care about your grades, as long as you keep up your grades and you're there for the golf. And he is a really big family guy. And he cares most about the team bonding. And so whenever I committed, he kind of wanted me to build the team. So he put it up to me, okay. Which, you know, and normally any other coach is like, okay, you're here. Now we're going to go recruit mm-hmm. whoever we want. And so I found a bunch of girls. Well, Reagan, of course, I was friends with her before that. And I was like, I love Reagan. So, and Reagan was like, okay, I really want to go to school with Maddie. So she committed. And then we both found these two Texas girls that we loved, and we played in a tournament with them. And I texted Coach about them, and he started to recruit them. And then, you know, they came up here and hung out with us, and we all just got really, really close. And mm-hmm. so that was a big deal for me, was being with really close friends. And then, of course, the school, I'm going to major in accounting, and they have a really good business program. I actually got I did an interview, and I accepted a full ride academic.
Even better for the golf team.
Yeah, that's to save money for a coach yes. and future recruits. So I accepted that, and so I got the Minders Fellow Scholarship, and so I will be at the business school studying accounting, and they do a lot of internships, mm-hmm. and it's a really, really big deal. So I was super excited for that. So my goal is to get my CPA and my CFE, and then I hope after college to go to Q school or do some kind of qualifying. And I'll always play in women's events right. and qualifiers, like USGA qualifiers. But I hope to get a full-time job somewhere in Oklahoma City or possibly Dallas. I have a lot of ideas in mind
right.
as to where I would go, but guess we'll just play it by ear.
Well, it's good to be able to, if accounting background, then you can count all your money on the LPGA yeah. Tour at some point, right?
Hopefully, that's my goal.
Absolutely. All right, Trace, you've been over there making faces, mm-hmm. wanting not to be a part of having to talk, but it's too bad. It's your turn.
Yep.
Now, I heard an urban legend after your OGA win. And of course, you were awesome this spring, state champion as an individual for Elk City in the high school. But there was a turning point that occurred right out here when Maddie beat you from the blue tees. Was that the catalyst of you turning your game around, or was that just something that happened and it's easy to tell that story?
I think it's just something easy to tell because it's not that big of a deal to me, but hearing it from her makes me want to play a little bit better. So I think I stepped my game up just a little bit more after that.
Man, your season honestly was one of the best ever mm-hmm. from anybody that's ever played here, and you know the history of it just like I do. Do you think about that as it's going, like, holy cow, I might have the best season ever at this place that's had, what, 7 state titles mm-hmm. as a team and all the all-staters? Do you think about that as it's going, or is that something you just answer a question by somebody like me about?
Yeah, just really answering a question about it. Really, I just play golf, play my game, and just play to win.
You've kind of been the comeback king. Starting clear back at Blanchard. What, 2 down with 5 to go, I think?
Yep,
yes, 2 sir. Shots down with 5 to go.
Mm-hmm.
Chased down William Sides of Tulsa and beat him by a shot. In that round, I mean, it's a stroke play round, so you know you just count them all up at the end.
Mm-hmm.
But as you're two down, and he actually missed that short one on 13 to go yeah. 3 up,
mm-hmm.
do you change your game plan, or do you kind of stick to it? You know, how did that go mentally for you as you stepped onto the 14th tee?
I think when I'm down a couple strokes with reaching to the end of the 18th hole, I really just keep playing steady and wait for them to mess up a little bit. So usually that's how it goes, and I'm just right there. And when he makes a mistake is when I step up and make some birdies or something.
See, it's interesting because I think a lot of people would have the exact opposite approach mm-hmm. and probably would go to their detriment thinking, okay, if I can birdie this one, mm-hmm. then I'm one back, instead of, hey, just hit great shots and watch him. That's a different way of putting the pressure on him mm-hmm. as opposed to what a lot of people would think.
Well, if you're teeing off first, which I had the box a couple holes in the final 5, I mean, I was hitting some good shots, and I knew he was going to be a little nervous about them. So when I did that, he choked it off a little bit.
Now, at the same thing happened at the State Am. But it's a different format. Mm-hmm. It's match play versus stroke play. Does that change your philosophy any when you're behind, say, you know what, 3 down through 7 to Luke, in the quarterfinals. Yeah. You were down 2 down through 7 in the finals. Mm-hmm. Because it's a match play event, does that change your game plan, or you kind of keep on doing the same things you would as in a stroke play event?
I think I did this exact same thing. I just kept playing my game and waited for them to do their little mistakes, and after that I'd capitalize off those, and that's when the momentum switched and I would take over and run it up till the end.
It's funny, and I don't think I've told anybody this, but I text you on Friday, Thursday or Friday of the week before mm-hmm. to see if you wanted to play with us here.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, I kind of got a bigger deal going there at the State Am. And but something you told me, you're like, and I think I got a pretty good chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
How much easier is it to play that well when you do have that confidence? When you're going into an event thinking, you know what? I can win this thing. It doesn't matter who's on the other side of the tee box.
Well, when I texted you that, I knew I had the good side of the bracket that didn't have all the crazy college players that are insane and all that stuff. So me and my caddy Aiden were just going through the matches and just talking about how we could win these ones and all that stuff. So I think we had a good idea that we were going to make it pretty far.
So you actually studied, because Travis studied the bracket for Nathan, and he was like, oh, not a good draw for Nathan at all.
Yeah, getting my college teammate next in the fall, Dalton Daniel, he's really good, so I felt bad for Nate having to get him first round.
So as you're moving along, you know, I don't think people realize, but it's 2 matches per day mm-hmm. for 3 days to be able to hoist that giant trophy that we're going to have a picture of on Skinny on Sports Facebook page at some point here. But as you're going along, you know, is there a time? Was there a time? I mean, I think in the quarterfinals against Luke Phillips, like, you know, did you know Luke going into that?
I did not know.
See, that's he's a little bit older,
yeah.
Even though he is from Sayre.
Mm-hmm.
Now you played your soon to be college teammate in the finals. Yeah. Did you actually know him?
Yeah, I've played with Dylan before.
How much harder was it to play somebody you know on that stage versus maybe somebody that you don't know and you're sitting there thinking, I'm gonna kick his butt?
Well.
Are you thinking that anyway?
That brings up playing my buddy Dominic Stevens in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
I beat him 5-3, so I kind of felt bad about it because we've been good buddies over the years. But at the end of the day, you just got to go in there and win.
I was also looking at as that went along, and there was another name that I saw, and I thought, oh my God, not again. And it was Matthew. I just thought, oh, are we going to have to play Matthew again? And, you know, it seemed like you guys were always kind of there with Heritage Hall and Elk, mm-hmm. especially at the end. So when you think about, I mean, I don't have a problem saying this, with all the people that have come through here, you literally have the most decorated junior golf career of anybody ever at Elk City.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, male. I can't tell you exactly what Kerry Chambers did, but I know male-wise, you are that. I mean, that's got to make you kind of puff out your chest a little bit, even when you're looking at a guy like me.
I'd like to say I'm humble about it, but I'm not the type to brag and say I'm the best to ever come out of Elk City, but I think I'm up there.
Yesterday, speaking of, I see the picture after you win. Mm-hmm. Another guy standing there that sure would have been a little bit of help, mm-hmm. You know, this back here in the spring. But, you know, that's just, to me, it just goes to show what is possible no matter where you're at. Because it's you, it's Ryder, first and second. You know, he grew up here. He's not here anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is there something about this place that helps? Or is it just the fact that a lot of people will play and you get to play with your buddies and you're playing golf instead of at the lake and stuff like that?
I think it's a little bit of both. Just growing up out here, the course is awesome, even though it's a little shorter than usual, but still helps you achieve what you need to do. And
why OCU?
Great place that I know that I will step in and be in the top 5 bag for sure my freshman year. So hopefully build off that and get the top spot.
Okay, so now, both of you.
Okay.
If we go out today to Elk City Golf and Country Club, who wins?
Me.
Yeah, Trace.
Now, wait a minute. I'm going to throw a caveat in. Would we have to give him an advantage of you playing the blue tees? Because I think if we let you play what would be considered the women tees from the red, I think we got a different game on our hands.
No, I'd let her play from the reds.
Oh, you would?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I'd let her play from the reds.
Now, see, this is exactly why we brought you in. And you're serious
about
it, too.
Trust me, there's going to be a lot of smack talk if we did this.
There would be.
Just from her, though.
I'm a big smack talker when it comes to him. not my, never like my opponents or anything. I'm humble towards them, but to Trace, it's always a, oh, I'm, you know, I think why he played so good was he just wanted to catch up to me. So.
That's like Kicking Bird when she shot 65 and she was bragging to me about it. And the next round I played, I shot 64. So I'm just trying to one-up her all the time.
Yeah. Well, listen, when you're both as good as you are, that can fuel both of you to continue to be great. Hey, thank you all so much for stopping by. Thanks for bringing the trophies. And good luck this weekend at the KECO.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. That's Maddie Camus, Trace Hill, the royal couple of junior golf in the state of Oklahoma. Thanks to Trace and Trace Hill, Maddie Camus. Interesting. There at the end, when kind of got them competitive toward each other about who would win a golf match, I think we saw some truth come out when they both admitted, you shoot the score, I try to one-up you. I think that really is a thing.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
Which is great. When you're both that good, you know, that little extra motivation.
So, yeah, you should have asked them what they do on date night. I'm curious if it's putt-putt or if it, they just totally go away from golf.
I figured it was just golf. Isn't that why they're good? All they do is play golf.
Well, you'd think they'd want to get away for a little bit. Like, you know what? Let's go to dinner and a movie.
Yeah, maybe so.
And they're like, oh, well, how about putt-putt? And then the competitive juice.
Probably watch Happy Gilmore.
Yeah. Start watch Happy Gilmore. Tin Cup. Yeah. No, that's good. Good stuff. Be interesting to see how they do this weekend.
Yeah. I mean.
On Saturday.
Good luck. Good luck to all the other ABC teams.
Yeah. Now they're going to be on the same team?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, I didn't know. I didn't know if they're going to.
It's those two. I think it's those two, Schmitty, Aiden Schmidt, and I assume either her brother or her dad.
Okay.
Just from the same last name. So.
Well, probably a good thing they're on the same team.
Oh, man. What about if they weren't on the same team and they were on the same tee box with each other?
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Man, that'd be interesting.
You guys take scores for the championship. I'll just watch that.
They get in a fight, and they're like, oh, that's it. Fine. Let's go to the golf course. We'll settle it on the golf course. go to the closest par three just to see. Maybe go up to have a little quick chip off.
I don't think that's the
closest
way.
To the hole wins.
I told you I was right. Okay.
That's cool.
Let's see. Where did we get? We didn't even get to anything, really.
Well, yeah, sure we did. We got to those two.
On my little sheet here, the only thing we talked about before was actually not even on the sheet. Thunder. Let's hit the draft for just a second. We saw that we got sent a trade proposal yesterday at the end of the show. I've heard it from different places, which is SGA and the 6th pick overall to Detroit for number one, presumably to draft Cade Cunningham. I mean, I don't know about you. I'd put the chances of that happening at almost zero.
Yeah.
I don't – that seems like, you know, maybe Oklahoma City offered the 6th pick and something for the first, whether or not it was, you know, subsequent first-round picks, whether or not it was a player on the roster, whatever it is. I can believe that would have been offered. Because here's the thing. In my mind, if Oklahoma City did offer that, Detroit would have already said yes.
I think so.
So maybe that was a, you know who the GM there is at Detroit? Troy Weaver. Remember him? He's been on Presti's staff for a long time.
Oh, okay.
So maybe that was a balloon up in the air of, hey, here's what we would need to do that. And then Presti moved on.
So maybe that's what Detroit requested, but doesn't mean that was offered.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they were talking and then all of a sudden it leaks out on the Detroit side. Here's what we would take. Hint, hint, this has been discussed. And Presti goes, okay, never mind then. Yeah. We'll move on to something different.
Doesn't seem very Presti-like to a mate. Well, I take that back. He could have made the offer, but it doesn't seem very Presti-like that would get out there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, unless he wanted it to.
Unless he wanted it to, or unless he went to SGA and go, listen, this is going to get out there. We have no intention of trading you. We're starting the wheels here.
Yeah.
The plan is in motion.
Yeah, I think that comes from somebody else, though. because I don't think if you're Presti, you would never fire that out there yourself, because then it makes it look like you're openly shopping what you think is going to be a franchise cornerstone. That doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Now, what does make sense is the other things that are floating out there, which say Oklahoma City is enamored with Evan Mobley and is doing everything they can to get in the top three to be able to take Mobley out of USC. Big guy, rim protector, athletic, can go out into the mid-range 12 to 15 feet already and knock down shots. And so, you know, the potential you would think would be pretty limitless as far as moving out. And then with the way the game's played right now, a big guy like that that can protect the rim and space the floor is almost invaluable in, with the way the league is going at the moment. So I put way more stock into something like that versus SGA's name being put into any type of trade that the Thunder would make during the draft tomorrow.
Yeah, and now what would it take to Thunder to get there, the top three? The 16 and 18? With the six?
I mean,
what is it going to take?
Who knows?
And who's going to bite on that?
That's the problem. I mean, we can sit here and make up all these ideas, but you've got to have somebody that would tango with you, and it seems like you got to have somebody in the top three. Because if not, then Mobley's not going to be there to be able to draft him at four. So it doesn't do you any good. I mean, if that's really your target, it doesn't do you any good that to get to the fourth pick. You know what I mean? It just, so what does that take? I mean, no one thinks they're going to, well, the 17 first-round picks in the next 5 or 6 years, whatever that is. There's no way they're taking all those. They're not making all those picks. I mean, we're sitting here talking about the first three and don't think there's any way that they're going to pick all three. So is that extra draft capital down the line enough to entice somebody? Is Kemba Walker being involved in some sort of deal enough to entice somebody to make a move like that? I mean, you would think, or at least I would think, if it's a Kemba Walker in the trade, that leads me to believe it's somebody that feels like they're one guy away type. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Is that Cleveland? Not really. You know, Toronto would be kind of the one maybe that you could point to of a franchise that's not normally in the lottery that is this year. But the problem is Toronto has Kyle Lowry already. Are they shopping him? And the other problem is, Toronto's got the fourth pick, which is outside of that top three that it seems like the Thunder need to get to.
Yeah, Mobley won't fall to four. So that, you know, it's the top three. And that goes back to Cleveland, where, you know, what.
Or is it Houston?
I think Houston, with everything that they desperately want to be number one. So I don't see them dropping out of number two.
Just depends on how much they like. It looks,
you know,
like they're going to pick Jalen Green.
Yeah.
It just depends on how much they like and what you're able to offer. You know, but that's the difference in this draft and what the NFL draft is night and day. And people, I'm afraid, conflate. Hey, we can package the 16 and 18 to move up to number 10. Well, in the NFL draft, yeah, you could.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much in this one, because for some reason, it's just in the minds of people that the only spot in the draft where it's even worth being is like the top five or six in this one, which we know 3 years down the road, the best six players in this draft aren't going to be the top six that are taken. And yep. I don't know if it's just if it's a difference in being, you know, the amount of players on the field in football, you can get you feel comfortable getting a quality guy in the first two or three rounds at different spots, whereas in the NBA, you know, it's a little bit harder to tell who's going to get there and who's not. Is it just a philosophy of drafting that is working for some and isn't working for others? But it feels like once you get past, you know, the top 10 or the top 8 or whatever in the NBA draft, it becomes so much more of a crapshoot than what it really needs to be, because a lot of times when you watch these guys play, you can see, okay, that guy's better than that guy, and it's going to be better than that. But I think that the word, that potential and the age thing is so much different in the NBA draft than it is in the NFL one because of, you know, just those extra years you get to see them. They have to stay, and you see where they develop too. I mean, and maybe that's it. If everybody was 21, then it's easier to tell who's going to get there versus an 18-year-old instead of an 18-year-old versus a 22-year-old.
Yeah.
Because now, you know, the guy that obviously can play basketball right now is Davion Mitchell from Baylor. He obviously is a very good basketball player. He shot 45% from three. He was the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, he can obviously play. But is that as good as he's going to get? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and that's kind of what's weighed, and it seems like to me a majority of the franchises go the other way and think, okay, this guy is, you know, 65% of Davion Mitchell as an 18-year-old. By the time he's 22, surely he'll get to at least that good.
Right.
And sometimes they do, but a lot of times they don't. And so that's where it almost feels like teams that don't try to think too much make the right choices.
Right. They
keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple. They don't overanalyze it. They don't try to make out this path of, okay, this is the path for this kid. In 5-10 years, this is where he should be. And then, yeah, and then those same teams, those same franchises, they 2 years with the kid that they just drafted, they realize, well, we don't like him, we'll trade him. They think the trajectory isn't there. You know, there's no patience anymore. But I mean, we've seen, but that's why, what's the saying sometimes in Sam Presti, we trust? You know, he'll get a kid or he'll trade for somebody and get him on the team and or in the franchise. And all of us, like, okay, fine example. We got Steven Adams in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of question of making that pick at the time. Like, you traded James Harden to draft Steven Adams, and I think it turned out okay for Oklahoma City. Okay, now the league has evolved since then, and his role on the floor is diminished greatly, and he's already on another team. But my point is, that told me I'm going to trust whatever Sam Presti does. If he chooses to stand pat at six or whatever he gives up to get up into the top three, and if it's true that they are enamored with Mobley, then I am too. So I'm Thursday. I mean, tomorrow and shoot today, we could have some noise happen by the end of the day and then all day tomorrow. It's going to be very interesting. I mean, I said it earlier on the Morning Animals. It could be the most history-changing draft for the Thunder happening on Thursday night, at least for the first round, as far as what direction the Thunder will go.
I think this is going to be totally interesting in that regard, because for the most part, the Thunder and Sam Presti, I mean, that's who's making these picks, have had kind of a model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been long, it's been athletic, and it's been can't shoot.
Yeah.
You know, is that still the case? Or, you know, you think about Corey Kispert as a guy that can obviously was able to shoot it, but not really the athlete. You know, if you know, Presti, if they find a way to trade 16 and 18 up to number 10 or something, no matter what happens with the sixth pick, and take a guy like that, does that signal, you know what, maybe a little bit of a change in what the philosophy is coming out of Oklahoma City? And I think another thing that's going to be interesting too is how much do they think or will we get a sense of what they really thought about Poku and his development with who they draft?
Maybe.
You know what? Mobley's a center. Poku's clearly not. You know what I'm saying? They don't play the same position by any stretch of the imagination. They're not the same player by any stretch. But, you know, all the smoke around Mobley, and I get that it might not come to fruition that you get there. But with these other picks, you know, looking at the brand new ESPN mock, it's James Bouknight shooting guard from UConn, and once again, a guy that, you know, has some questions shooting it but can score. And then you look down a little bit further, and it's another shooting guard, and then a small forward, power forward, and Jalen Johnson, the guy from Duke that quit through the middle of the season. None of that seems, you know, he's 6'9 forward, guard skills, that's kind of a Poku, kind of not, you know, but with two shooting guards and not really a big man, maybe that signals we really liked what he did and can't wait to see where he gets to. You know what I mean? And that's there's always that out there, I think, with how young he was. And quite frankly, he improved a ton, still wasn't real good, but improved a ton. And so how much do they – how much, you know, what do they think there?
How much do you think Presti converses with Dagnall? Hey, what works for you? What works in your system? This is who I got my eye on. Do you agree with this too?
I would say very little.
And then if he asks Dagnall's opinion, does Dagnall go, hey, you're calling the shots here. You do it.
I'd say very little, because I think Dagnall is the coach because he's going to do what Presti wants. He's going to play the system Presti wants to fit players into.
Sure.
Here's a question on the text line. If y'all could pick any player, which guy are you taking?
Any player?
Any player.
Cunningham.
Yeah.
For everything that we talked about, his youth, his potential, we saw that rise as the college season went on for him and how good he can be, and I don't think we've seen how great he can be. He just seems like the one guy that you cannot pass on. So if I'm picking any player, yeah.
I think I probably would too. I wonder how much being here kind of reveals the warts of Cade Cunningham, whereas if he played somewhere else, we wouldn't have seen him every day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, you just got a chance to pick apart every single thing because you saw every single game. I will say this, though. Jalen Green.
Yeah.
Man.
But if you sit down and really watch video on Mobley.
Mobley looks.
It makes you salivate a little bit.
It does. I mean, you can see the potential.
Yeah.
But Jalen Green, I think. This was always thought of as a five-player draft. I really think it's three. I think there's three guys that are way better than everybody else, and I'll tell you who I'd pick tomorrow. We got
to
go.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered up.